Welcome once again to the psychedelicparenting.org podcast. As always, I am your host, Jonathan. Before we start today, I'd like to bring your attention to a few upcoming events that you'll certainly be interested in hearing about. First is the 10th Annual Women's Visionary Congress, which will be held this weekend, June 17th through the 19th, at the Institute of Noetic Sciences Earthrise Retreat Center in Petaluma, California. Featured speakers include past psychedelic parenting guest and WVC board member Dr. Maria Vittoria Mangini, board member Annie Oak, and my friend at MAPS, Virginia Wright, whose talk is entitled Fundraising for Controversial Causes. Also appearing will be Dr. Marsha Rosenbaum, author of the groundbreaking anti-DARE youth drug program Safety First, whose talk is entitled What About the Kids? Why Legalization of Marijuana Will Benefit Youth, which is of extra special interest to our community here. Many other powerful women and a few men will be speaking on a variety of topics relating to psychedelic and plant spirituality and awareness. Tickets can be purchased at the WVC website, which is www.visionarycongress.org, or by clicking on the link in today's program notes. The Psychedelic Parenting Away team was blessed to be a part of the WVC's New York City Salon at the Alchemist Kitchen in Manhattan back in March. Unfortunately, we weren't able to be here this weekend, but we know that it will be a revolutionary and boundary-dissolving event. If you're able, I highly recommend it. The other event, further on the horizon, is Beyond Psychedelics 2016. It is a joint project of psychedelic researchers based at the National Institute of Mental Health Czech Republic and members of the Czech Psychedelic Society. Beyond Psychedelics will focus on the broader context of psychedelic experience, including a variety of purposes, setting, and external factors that influence psychedelic use. Topics on the position which psychedelics hold in modern society will also be discussed. The conference takes place on September 30th through October 2nd, 2016, in beautiful Prague, Czech Republic. Confirmed speakers include Dennis McKenna, Rick Doblin, Amanda Felding, Bia Labate, Luis Eduardo Luna, Robin Carhart-Harris, Ben Sessa, Ingmar Gorman, Jonathan Dickinson, Raven Ray, and many others. There are still slots available for potential speakers, and the organizers are still accepting abstracts through June 21st. For more information, go to www.beyondpsychedelics.cz or click the banner in the program notes to today's show. Finally, if you like what you see and hear at Psychedelic Parenting, please consider a tax-deductible gift to our work by clicking on the purple donate button in the program notes or by buying your stuff through our Amazon partner link. Your support is greatly appreciated. And now I would like to introduce to you a young father who asked to go by the name Antler. Antler is an aspiring herbalist and proud parent of two young children. He and his partner recently welcomed their son into the world with a challenging premature birth after mom's water broke at only 32 weeks gestation. During this experience, Antler utilized his relationship with psilocybin mushroom tea to navigate, manage, and overcome the challenges that arose from having a partner hospitalized for 5 weeks and a newborn in the NICU for 2 weeks. Antler currently makes a living working in finance for a large bank, with past career experience in private investment at a hedge fund, as well as public service with the U.S. Treasury Department. His experience with herbalism and sacred plants continues to lead him away from the corporate world and back to a more healthy and natural lifestyle. He found psychedelic medicines through his study of natural healing and a passion for wild food foraging. Antler says that the role of entheogens in our lives is a hot topic within the rewilding movement, which he will discuss in today's interview. Antler uses rewilding strategies to participate in what he calls a project of reversing human domestication. Welcome, Antler, to Psychedelic Parenting.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, we appreciate having you on, and we really appreciate hearing the voices of people in the community who are not necessarily quote-unquote psychedelic celebrities. I think that we can get a really interesting picture of how psychedelics are being used in family life by, you know, quote-unquote regular folks, and I think that's a really good part of, it's a really important part of what we're doing here. So thank you so much for having the bravery to be on.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, definitely as much gratitude as I can give because, you know, using psychedelics in a birth experience is not something that's easily shared with friends and family. And to have a community, at least remotely, to share this with is very important.
I agree.
Sharing our birth stories, definitely very important. So I really appreciate what you're doing.
Awesome. Thanks, man. And it's a very interesting thing because in Amazonian societies, amongst people in say the Santo Daime use of the medicine during the birthing experience and in infancy is integral to their culture. I mean, women will drink the medicine during pregnancy, during labor. A baby's first taste of mother's milk will often be accompanied by a little bit of medicine rubbed on mom's nipple. So, and I often have said that the difference between those folks and us is not that they are inherently more evolved or that they are they have something fundamentally different about themselves, other than the fact that they have a cultural container with which to process and integrate these experiences for young people, mothers, etc. So what we're trying to do here is create a similar container in our culture for those experiences. So thank you for being a part of that.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Well, Antler, why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about you and your background and how you came to psychedelics in general?
Sure. Background, I am currently in kind of corporate America world. I have two children now. I have a four-year-old and now a 7-week-old or so, and currently working at a bank as an analyst. And my background before that was also in the investment community. I've worked for a hedge fund, which is a kind of investment vehicle, and I've also worked for the U.S. Treasury. So, an unusual background, perhaps, for coming to the psychedelic community. I discovered psychedelics kind of late on, not really in my youth, but more recently through herbalist training. I'm studying to be an herbalist, and also through studying wild nutrition and using plants in our landscape through foraging and things like that for proper nutrition. So that's how I actually discovered the mushroom in the context of nutrition, as opposed to some kind of medicine per se.
So you discovered psychedelic mushrooms through the gateway of, say, like hunting for wild morels or something like that in your local environment?
Yeah, exactly. And from a nutrition perspective, the mushroom, from a wild nutrition perspective and foraging, mushrooms are, not only a great source of calories, but also they're in the classification of like an adaptogen, that they help us adapt to our environment, just in general, like mushrooms like chaga and reishi. Mm-hmm. So not just psilocybin containing, but mushrooms almost in general have an adaptogenic quality, which is not something that the West has like in its medicine chest at the moment. The concept of adaptogens, but they're heavily used in the East, and kind of the psilocybin containing mushrooms are an extreme form of that adaptogenic. Even that's the classic like McKenna theory on the psilocybin mushrooms as like the catalyst for evolutionary leaps in our history.
Lovingly referred to as the stoned ape theory of mm-hmm. evolution. Yeah.
So that was part of how I got to find the psychedelic. And then also in my parenting philosophy, growing from the kind of pro-parent to pro-child shift, which is a big paradigm shift that I think is occurring at the moment. And one of the, related to kind of the archaic revival thinking, is the rewilding movement. And that rewilding movement is part of the archaic revival, I think, where we're starting to incorporate kind of things that our ancestors did that were kind of thankless up until now.
Well, let me ask you to dig into a couple of the pieces of terminology that you're using, because I'm not sure that necessarily all of our listeners will know what you're speaking of. So, first of all, tell me what you'd mean by the difference between pro-child versus pro-parent.
Sure. There's a fantastic book, for people interested, called The Manual by Dr. Faye Schneider.
Okay.
It's called The Manual, and it kind of talks about pro-parent versus pro-child upbringing, where, you know, historically we're in a very pro-parent paradigm, where you kind of protect the parent's emotions and over the child. The child's second, you know, children should be seen, not heard. That kind of idea. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, a pro-parent would say something like, the parent is kind of immune. The parent can do no wrong. Whereas the pro-child is, you know, parents take responsibility. Pro-parent parenting, not a lot of education going on from the parent's perspective on parenting. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the pro-child category, parents are open to learning and changing things. You know, not necessarily just hitting the photocopy button on what happened to them. Mm-hmm. You know, pro-parenting would be like kind of like bad seed theory, where, you know, the child's a bad seed. whereas a pro-child version would be, you know, people are, you know, generally born good, and so that's. But The Manual by Dr. Faye is a wonderful book that kind of goes into that.
We'll be sure to include a link in the program notes for that book if our listeners are interested in going deeper into that subject. So tell me also a little deeper about what you mean by the rewilding movement.
Rewilding, yeah. So that's definitely something worth Googling, looking into. Kind of headed up by two guys, kind of more tribal leaders in that movement, Daniel Vitalis and Arthur Haynes, they have plenty of material out there at the moment. So it's basically, instead of being so caught up in culture and what culture has to offer, take kind of the best of what culture has, but also use nature as a guide as well. So, and that we are, in a way, like kind of domesticated humans. And that the problem with domesticating animals, whether it be in plants, whether it be like some kind of phytochemical that it uses to defend itself from being preyed upon, or in our domesticated animals, they lose the ability to essentially protect themselves. And the domesticated human is the same way, that we're kind of in this cultural zoo at the moment, and we're continuously over thousands of years now been domesticating ourselves to the point where things are kind of starting to almost break down. And the rewilding movement is pushing back on that and starting to go back in the other direction of trying to reverse human domestication, so that we can, you know, kind of re-engage our instincts and essentially be able to live like a less domesticated version of ourselves for proper health. And the psychedelics are part of that process, part of that movement.
Mm-hmm. So that sounds very similar to what Terrence McKenna would have described as the archaic revival. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's why that was another reason I came to this as from a wild food perspective. The psychedelic being essentially part of a complete diet.
So I think that many of our listeners would say that that the business that you're in of banking would be considered in some ways the epitome of the domesticated human lifestyle, when you take the sort of how divorced it can sometimes be from the reality of life. So tell me, how did you come to be interested in this rewilding from living your life in the banking industry?
Yeah, the the banking industry, you know, kind of like one thing leads to another, just trying to, you know, support yourself and your family as far as like jobs go, corporate America goes. I was always interested in the idea of like investing, and I still am, and business and things like that. I've just been, you know, good with numbers and gone where opportunity is taking me. But my passion is with nature and with the plants, and also kind of self as a value, you know, self-sufficiency, any kind of discipline where you're highly skilled and you're very narrow, and you're even if it's, you know, engineering or something where you spend, you're highly technical, you're kind of it's at the expense of something else, kind of there's like an opportunity cost there. And so the rewilding stuff, the back to nature, it's part of it is self-sufficiency and being able to take care of yourself with medicines, the way that healthcare, the shape of healthcare. I wanted to be able to use the plants in my landscape and understand what they're used for minor and major, you know, health insults that, mm-hmm. you know, inevitably creep up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was always, basically it's just a calling, you know, when I used to go running and all of a sudden I'd be running on a path and I'd see a plant and I'd have to stop and I'd have to go and I'd have to sit with it. And then, you know, my runs turned into walks, mm-hmm. and my walks turned into sits, and then I could never leave the prairie. There was just something, these like different plants were always calling to me. And so this has been happening for about 4 or 5 years, and it was definitely triggered by my like daughter's birth, almost 5 years ago, mm-hmm. where it was such a major life altering experience for me, and I'm in most parents as well, but it was just so that my values were so reoriented. I was living in a downtown high rise, and now I'm living, you know, just, you know, 4 years later, right on the edge of a 10,000 acre forest preserve, you know, so I've just pulled a big 180 on lifestyle, and it's been, and the journey continues, and so this past year, probably the last 12 to 18 months have been more recently kind of the journey into the entheogens. Mm-hmm. Like we first met at the Viroqua conference. Yeah. And
I would say my assumption would be that, you know, being successful in banking and business has given you the resources and the abilities to live, you know, out away from the city and amongst nature, and maybe probably having a little bit more land, that sort of thing. And that points to the sometimes, you know, the trapeze walk that we have to do as parents when you have values that you want to live by. And at the same time, there are many pressures in the society, you know, whether it's financial, monetary pressures or family pressures or whatever, to, you know, maybe where they're trying to push you towards other things or like more material values or something like that. And it's really cool when you can see somebody using, you know, that sort of success in business or success in banking or whatever, in order to, you know, catapult their family into a place where they have more opportunities to elevate their consciousness. So cheers, man.
Yeah, thank you. And I couldn't do it without my partner. She's been just so trustworthy and so loyal and so open and supportive to these things, because, you know, I've kind of been the one that's introduced a lot of these things into her life, and she's introduced a lot of the kind of pro-child parenting, attachment parenting, in my life. And, you know, we really work very well together, but it takes a lot of courage, from her to kind of trust that I'm doing these kind of more extreme things and things that are not accepted yet in the current, society that we're in, that there are risks that we're taking, and she's been so very, very supportive. I wouldn't be able to do it. All of these things without her.
So. I would wholeheartedly agree with that statement in regards to my own wife. So yeah, Very cool to have somebody who compliments us and supports us. Because I think as men, at least my own perspective, and you know, other men in the in this community that I've interviewed, it's really important to have somebody who supports you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how what your early experiences with psychedelics were like?
Sure. Yeah. So I kind of found psychedelics about 18 months ago, here in my early 30s. Prior to that, I had a couple of experiences in college that were enjoyable, but nothing like I've experienced more recently. I basically didn't probably take enough, essentially, in college. It was always, splitting bags with friends and always eating things on a full stomach and always having a ton of external stimulation. So it was difficult to go within. Mm-hmm. And so my college days, I did have, a few limited experiences that were all very enjoyable. But it was mainly for entertainment and increasing the, I guess, stimulation of the in the moment, and so although it was very enjoyable, I didn't really turn that kind of critical use the medicine for more of the inward journey. It was more it was more for entertainment purposes,
and you discount that either. I mean, that can be really important for the development of a human being. And, you know, these things can, even in a recreational setting, can become life-changing experiences when people least expect it, which is why we stress so much the necessity of set and setting and, you know, respecting these substances. Because sometimes, you know, you can be, just doing Molly at a rave and, you know, suddenly God is there in front of you. So these things will change lives, even if people aren't necessarily expecting them to do that.
Right. I totally agree. I just, I think my more recent experiences with the insights going within have been so powerful that I want everyone to do that same thing, but I need to not let that go. But my earlier experiences in my college days were probably low, medium dosage doses, where I kind of got the hint of what they could be, but I was always scared. The parallels between psychedelics and sexuality, I think, are there, and same with sexuality. I was always a little bit of a late bloomer, and I think out of fear, and I think the same with psychedelics. I think I was afraid to do too much, and so I always enjoyed myself, but I held back. And more recently, through just better understanding, more education, more maturity, I was able to create the safe experiences to those kind of safe breakthrough experiences that the medicine has available to us.
So tell us about this experience that you had with the recent premature birth of your son and how you incorporated the mushroom into that.
Sure. So it does go back to also to the fertility as well, using mushrooms in for fertility because of how difficult it was for us to actually get pregnant. Uh-huh. And so I can go back there. So that was another reason why the mushroom kind of found me when it did. Since my daughter and my son are 4 years apart, it took a while, and I was reading about mushrooms for as a potential for as a central nervous system stimulant, as from McKenna stories, sexual stimulant. Right. And so sure enough, after our first kind of psychedelic you know, sexperience, sure enough, the next pregnancy test after that was a positive.
That's beautiful.
And so the mushroom, you know, has had a major influence, not only on my life, but just literally in the, we believe in the conception of our son, and, you know, and then it, we're pregnant and we're happy and we're just kind of moving on with life. And, at 32 weeks, 32 weeks pregnant, fast forward, at 32 weeks pregnant in the middle of the night, my partner's water broke. And this was a, you know, a very devastating thing to have happened. Sure. Very traumatic. What, you know, what's happening? It's 32 weeks. And as we were packing up to head to the hospital, we were waiting on my parents, who were going to come here and watch our four-year-old daughter while we went to the hospital. Well, as I was packing the bag, I just felt the mushroom calling to me to pack it and bring it with. And it just so, and so I grabbed one tiny little mushroom and brought it with and went to the hospital, and we were able to stabilize mom and, you know, get her, you know, bed rested with everything that she needed. And we actually, were able to stay in that position with the water, with the ruptured membrane, for an additional 3 weeks. The baby was able to hang out and be content enough to, and stable enough so that we got an extra 3 weeks in the womb.
I've been really surprised. One of our recent guests, David Guyon, I actually interviewed him while he was in the NICU with his newborn son. And he was also talking about that process. And that's something I was very surprised about. I don't think many people know that, is that how good our medicine has recently got in stabilizing a pregnancy for weeks, even after the water breaks. I think that's a pretty miraculous thing.
Right. Yeah. And so we were very fortunate, and we ended up inducing labor at 35 weeks. And so essentially during this time, you know, I always thought that the mushroom, I was going to use it as like a sacrament, like around the solstices and equinoxes for large, heroic dosages during these times as a ceremonious thing, four times a year. Sure. And then it just dawned on me, or I realized that instead of using it in that way with these heroic dosages, that I could use them in a much more limited way, much lower dosage, mm-hmm. Essentially to become kind of, I don't want to say super dad, but like I needed something during this very stressful time with my partner in the hospital for 5 weeks, mm-hmm. and my son in the NICU, mm-hmm. for 2 weeks, and a four-year-old to take care of, and being and still needing to be the sole provider of the home, mm-hmm. and keeping the work life going. Right. And because what I noticed after doing more of the larger dosage is that the next day you feel fine and you have energy. And even when your four-year-old jumps on your stomach at 6 a.m., you still are able to function, and yeah. which is very different than alcohol, which, you know, you basically are totally shot. And so, I thought, you know, maybe if I try these things at a very, very small dose, that I can have heightened energy, heightened abilities to kind of just deal with every day, all these challenges, not to be more thrilled with the results.
Well, why don't you tell us about the birth experience? Because when we were talking and setting up this podcast, you talked about how having the mushroom in your system during that birth experience was pretty transformative for you. Why don't you talk about that?
Yes. So we knew that because we were giving birth at 35 weeks that the baby was going to be going to the NICU, and that there was going to be some separation between mother and baby. And that was something that was very traumatic for us. We had planned a home birth. We were attachment parents. Like, the baby was going straight to the mom, never leave mom.
Right.
And so we knew that we were going to have this separation. And so what I thought, because the mushroom has these boundary dissolving qualities, that what I could attempt to do, whether through just intention or mindfulness, and with the mushroom's help, take enough of a dosage to potentially kind of maintain the connection and keep the connection between mom and baby as myself and the baby went to the NICU and had to leave mom behind mm-hmm. with the care that she needed.
Mm-hmm.
And so my thinking at the time was that I could somehow kind of keep us all together using the mushroom medicine as this kind of boundary dissolving way of all staying connected, particularly concentrating on mom and baby.
Mm-hmm.
And
one of the things that you noted too when we were talking earlier was the fact that because you were in the situation where you're in the hospital, it was in the ICU, that you personally weren't required for life-saving kind of decision-making. I think that would be an important thing to talk about in this context.
Definitely. That's a very important kind of disclaimer to make, that when we had planned a home birth, and this was not part of my home birth plan at all. This was, you know, moving, improvising, I guess. And in this situation, because it was a hospital birth, because we were high risk patients, and we were fully kind of, our power was kind of given over to the medical system,
mm-hmm.
That I was not in a place where I was needed for mother and baby, but from a medical perspective, go back a generation or two, dads were not even allowed in the room, you know.
Right.
So it's
out in the hallway with your box of cigars.
Yeah, exactly. So that is an important thing to bring up. This was not ever part of our home birth plan. This was something that just kind of dawned on me as something that I could possibly do to improve the experience, improve the outcome of our experience, because we knew that having the cord cut immediately, as opposed to like delayed cord clamping, having the baby removed and separated from mom right away,
mm-hmm.
when we were, you know, this attachment parenting philosophy people, that this was an attempt to alleviate some of that stress.
Mm-hmm.
And so
your partner was aware of and in support of your experiment?
Yes.
that's a pretty important part of this too.
Yeah. And I think so. I think so. I mean, and because also with the birth experience being such a long, like being induced at 35 weeks, I mean, the baby does not want to come out at that particular time. So it was a very challenging induction, very long birth. I mean, it was, you know, we started at early afternoon and didn't give birth until 7 a.m. the next day. And so for me to be able to utilize the mushroom to be fully present with mom and have the energy to be there with her through the night like that, whereas, you know, even though there is adrenaline, you know, that it's very difficult to keep up your awareness, your presence, your state of mind
mm-hmm.
for such a long period of time. And, you know, birth being for females, for moms, birth is already a boundary dissolving experience in and of itself. They don't need any boundary dissolving aids per se. And so it was something, and given kind of the disempowering birth experience that we were already in, being attached into the system, being hooked up by monitors and continuous monitoring, things like that, everything that we would not want. And that's why we were home birthers. So with our first, we had a home birth. Mm-hmm. And it's also maybe worth noting that the mushroom also, you know, allows or helps like this concept of surrender, where the birth experience for moms is one of surrender. And for me, being able to kind of experience that kind of surrender with, you know, accepting the position that we were in, accepting the being, you know, in the medical system, being part of the, having an kind of an institutionalized birth,
So did you find that you were having trouble accepting the situation? Because obviously that would be a big, huge disappointment if you're planning on doing a home birth to be in that ICU situation.
Yes, and we were very critical of the kind of medical establishment for, you know, various reasons. You know, we don't love pharmaceutical drugs. We don't love the interventions, particularly with birth, that tend to just make things worse. Mm-hmm. But in these high risk situations,
you don't have much option. Yeah.
You know, that is what we feel is the medical establishment's there for, as this safety net, this kind of emergency room type thing. And
one of the things, I've noted is that our medical system is very, very good at triage. You know, if you had the example that I use is, you know, if someone chopped your arm off, you wouldn't want to go to a chiropractor or an herbalist or an acupuncturist. You want to go to the emergency room and have a surgeon sew your arm back on. And so our system is very, very good at triage. They're just not very good at some other things like chronic pain and, you know, dealing with sort of, you know, emotional, spiritual issues and those sorts of things. This is certainly a triage kind of situation.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we're definitely accepted all the help that we can get in that situation. Yeah, the system, it's basically, if you think of it's very similar to war, and it was kind of a built up in war. So the highest office of the medicine is like the Surgeon General, right? The Surgeon General, you know, it's like, it's very, you know, it's not, so it's very, very good at triage, but, you know, but prevention's not really part of their model, you know.
So what was your experience of the birth like with the help of the mushroom?
Well, you know, we talk about set and setting a lot in the psychedelic community, and because the set and the setting were not ideal, I think that the mushroom kind of held itself at bay a little bit, where I still had to kind of, there was still a lot of anxiety. And there was, you know, the setting as far as like blinking lights and sirens and white coats and things. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if the medicine was really holding back, or I was holding it back. And so, you know, overall, it was something that provided the kind of more of the energy that I needed and the presence that I needed to be kind of face to face, forehead to forehead, push it, like holding mom, just being there completely, as if it was just the two of us in our home, which was what we wanted. The mushroom allowed me to have that experience, because the mushroom, it like opens like the doors of possibility. So I could imagine being, you know, being at home, being just with mom, just with our daughter. Our daughter wasn't there, unfortunately. I mean, that was one of the reasons why we wanted the home birth too, is to have our daughter there. But to, you know, basically to get into a mindset and an experience that is, you know, less medical and more just, and so I was able to kind of get into that space. And, you know, it's impossible to prove, but I mean, I do think that it was, you know, something that improved the outcome of the experience for everybody involved.
What was your partner's description of the experience afterward? Did she sense that there was something different?
Well, I think that, you know, her experience having to be induced, having this kind of disempower. I mean, we're birthers, like people, you know, like my partner is in the, is a, like a, through her profession is a birth doula. We're birther people, and for her to have this experience to be kind of disempowered and induced at 35 weeks and just that, and she, you know, she was, most women when they're induced like this, you know, they go through the epidural route, they do the pain, and she did not, you know, she didn't want to do that. So how much pain, you know, her, and after the fact, you know, she didn't have a, like a postpartum, depression situation, but because of the mother or being separated, right directly away, like she definitely felt that, and that definitely had an impact on her.
Sure.
And I think with me, at least being with the intention of keeping things connected, you know, remotely from, you know, down the hall and around the corner, I think did have a positive impact. But like I said, can never prove that. But it was a very rough, painful experience. I mean, she said she's not having any more kids, but then she quickly changed her mind and we're back on schedule of having 2 of 5 or something like that.
So tell me about the mushrooms' participation in the postpartum experience of being in the hospital for a month.
Right. Yeah. See, what's really special, I think, about this particular experience. You know, less, even though utilizing the medicine during the actual birth is important, I think the real takeaway from my experience is how one can use low dose mushrooms for kind of prolonged and chronic stressful situations.
Okay.
You know, you know, like I mentioned before, having to be this kind of super dad where being in the hospital for 5 weeks, for mom being in the hospital for 5 weeks, you know, you can't just eat hospital food that entire time. So just, you know, being able to
Yeah, especially if you're cook. Foraging and eating fresh foods and all that kind of stuff.
Right, we're huge gardeners and we do the permaculture thing. And so, you know, just cooking, trying to bring warm food to her, dealing with where does my daughter need to be, how am I going to, you know, still do the work that I need to get done to you know, provide for the home, and also take care of all of the household kind of chores, all the thankless tasks that typically moms do around the house, just to keep the house moving, with dishes and laundry and all of that. I mean, to be able, I really felt like what it would be like to be a single parent with multiple children that you have to deal with. And
my wife was just out of town for the better part of last week, and I was trying to go to work and make sure my kids got picked up from school. I was a wreck. I'm so in awe of the single parents that I know. It's incredible.
Yeah, it is. And then just with the added, I guess, stress of being in a hospital situation and unknown, if things are going to end badly or are we going to be okay? And just in that, you know, there was a lot of driving back and forth from the hospital with, you know, tears in my eyes, just not knowing like what's going to happen next.
Sure.
And, and just lack of sleep and all of that, I essentially used extremely low dose, mushrooms, you know, every other day, every third day, something like that, to kind of gain the energy that I needed to get through all of this situation and complete all of the tasks on the, you know, the never ending to-do list. Yeah. And it really did work. I mean, I couldn't speak high. I mean, I had experience with kind of through my herbalist training. Like I have experience with kind of self-medicating, if I may, with just various things. And so I'm comfortable making teas and feeling and understanding when things are in my system and how they're acting in my system and when they're fully metabolized, and the mushrooms no different. I'm you know, capable of like understanding like when it's fully metabolized and how to do I need more, do I need less, and kind of able to self-manage that. And I think a lot of people do have that ability as well.
So making a tea from dried mushrooms, that was your main delivery method?
Right. That was the main method, or in some lemon juice. That would be another way. Though I found with lemon to be a little bit agitating, that it's possible that it's the sensations might be a little bit stronger,
yep,
but it's more the sensations become a little bit agitated. Mm-hmm. And I think the anxiety, at least from my experience, the anxiety was higher. We use lemon. I don't know if the lemon
definitely does bring it,
disrupts something with the medicine, but teas is the preferred method of the dried mushroom.
Yeah, the lemon definitely does bring the experience on faster, and I think it decreases some of the natural sort of time release qualities of the mushroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my experience.
Why don't you give us one specific thing that happened over the course of that time in the NICU where you feel like the mushroom's presence in your system was extremely valuable?
So people talk about ego a lot and knocking back the ego. But this birth experience in and of itself for me was a massive ego blow, because kind of part of my narrative or part of the story that I was living was this concept of bringing forth healthy children into the world, and my path with like nutrition and like herbal healing and things like that. Like part of that story is, and part of the narrative is, you do this to bring forth healthy children into the world. And that really kind of, and not that they're related, but this birth experience, it kind of blew that story up in my face a little bit. And what I realized, that like, it was such a big ego blow to me, because what I realized is if this happened to somebody else, I would have been so critical on them and their choices. I would have said, oh, you see, they're not doing the right things, and they're not eating the right foods, and they're not taking care of themselves in the right way. And I would have been so critical on others if they had their water break at 32 weeks, you know. And so that was a really big ego blow to me to have that experience.
Yeah. And so what's the takeaway from that for you or for others?
Well, I think it is about, you know, planning and being like open to plans changing and the chaos and basically to be to not be so judgmental about situations, because you know, you could, with even with all the best plans, you could do everything right or think you could do everything right and read all the books, and things can still go wrong, and it doesn't have to be anybody's, you know, fault per se, and mm-hmm. and to basically not be so quick to judge and be critical of other people's situations.
That's an amazing lesson, isn't it?
So that was something that I think was important to have happened to me at this particular time, because I think I was getting to be too ahead of myself with you know, this is the right way, this is what people should do, and so I've taken a step back and I think I, you know, potentially there even can be some, you know, relationships in my life that could be better repaired, you know, with this kind of new understanding of kind of reducing that kind of critical eye, you know, everywhere I look when there's some kind of symptom that arises.
Yeah. That's a great lesson. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. Well, we were, because of our parenting style, where we did not want to ever break the link between parent and child, that we were always, one of us was always in the NICU with the child at mm-hmm. all times. Like we never left him alone. Mm-hmm. And however, the staff, they didn't love that we were always there. So they did make things very nice. We had wonderful help. We have like very little to complain about. We had wonderful, wonderful help. However, they didn't want us to, even though we were there 24 hours a day through the night, they didn't want us sleeping like next to mm-hmm. the baby.
Okay.
And so, so there was not a whole lot of sleep going on. And there was times where like, you know, mom definitely needed sleep. And so I essentially just would consume a little bit of the mushroom in a tea and stay up all night with the baby in the NICU without needing to fall asleep, because I had the energy and the drive and the stimulation that I needed without having to like constantly go get cups of coffee or mm-hmm. anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, just one tea. And, you know, at 10 p.m. or whatever time I, you know, kind of started my shift and let mom go to sleep, I was able to stay up the entire night through and hold my baby and coo and let him relax on my chest as opposed to in the little bassinet there. Mm-hmm. And without a problem, I could, without any, wasn't it falling asleep or anything like that. And so, so that was probably the most useful, way that, because we weren't able to sleep next to the baby through the night like that. Mm-hmm. And for me to be able to utilize the mushroom in that way,
yeah.
Without stress or struggle with that at all, I was very happy. Though when we do talk like set and setting, it is not the most ideal setting with lots of kind of babies. Though because NICU premature babies, a lot of them don't have like the lung development to cry. Mm-hmm. There was like an kind of an eerie silence mm-hmm. in the NICU, even though there's lots of little babies there. I mean, there's probably the hardest part is all the alarms, all the beeping sure. and the buzzing of the machines that are tracking heart rates and breath and pulse. And so these things are all constantly going off. But the babies are to typically pretty silent. I mean, and sadly, some of them don't have the ability to even cry yet. Their lungs, like crying's a wonderful thing because it shows they have the lung development to cry. So, you know, the setting is not ideal, but the mushroom definitely allowed me to stay there, stay present, and do what I needed to do, and then the next day have to either work remotely or take care of my daughter or my house or in some fashion. And I was fully capable of doing that without feeling like I was going to fall asleep or kind of like break down or anything like that. I felt like I had the strength, and I did. I physically did have the strength. It's amazing. You know, when I talked before about, you know, using these mushrooms, like for a nutritional perspective, mm-hmm. I mean, same with like cannabis versus alcohol. I mean, if you utilize alcohol, you could see how it damages your body, your brain, your metabolism, things like that. And with cannabis, it's the same situation where you're saying, okay, I'm not physically degrading myself. I'm not mentally degrading myself. I'm able to function the next morning. And so mushrooms are in that category where they feed your body, they feed your brain. Mm-hmm. They make you stronger, and these are all hard fought realizations, you know, growing up in a culture that, you know, demonizes these things.
And I think it also points to, this interesting work that Jim Fadiman and other people have been doing regarding, what's referred to as microdosing. We're taking substances at a sub-perceptual level, can actually have antidepressive qualities. It can have qualities that enhance creativity and even like mathematical problem solving and engineering and things like that. So it's very interesting to keep in mind that the level of dosing can have a significant experience on what is possible with these substances, because we're very used to just talking about them in terms of the heroic dose or the mind altering experience or the visions of God or whatever. But in these lower doses, they can have very interesting effects on our ability to, you know, go beyond what we're used to, what our normal sense of limitations or abilities are. So that's very interesting. So we're getting towards the end of our time together, but I want to thank you so much, Antler, for coming on and telling your story and for having the bravery to, you know, add to this resource of information that we're building. So thank you so much.
Oh, no, thank you. I want to express as much gratitude as I can for you to give me a voice and outlet to share a birth story that's difficult to share anywhere else. And so... I'll never forget this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Right on. Well, I have a history of staying in touch with my guests, and think we'll definitely have opportunities to work together again in the future. And thank you again so much for being on.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.